You're listening to Let's Talk with Emma right here on Talk Zone. Now, here's Emma.
Hey, everybody, this is Emma, and you are listening to Let's Talk with Emma right here on Talk Zone. And this is a gorgeous day here in southern Indiana, where I am coming to you from. I have a great guest, and the phone lines are going to be open, so anyone that has questions or wants to call in and say hi, you can do that by calling 1-888-GO-FOR-IT or 1-888-463-6748. Oh my goodness, it's going to be a day. My guest is Steve Snyder. He is an award-winning author, speaker, and historian of the 8th Army Air Force. He has written a book, Shot Down, that is an Amazon number one bestseller. And he's also got about 25 other national awards. So I think we should just get right into it. And so, Steve, let's talk to Steve. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great. Emma, how are you?
I am fine as frog hair split down the middle.
Well, that's a new one.
Yeah. Really? But my grandma used to say that all the time. So we're doing good. I was reading some of the info that you sent me. That was very kind of you, to get prepared for today's show. And you are a busy guy, my friend. You do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I keep really, really busy. It's a second career, and it's a passion of mine, and I have a great time doing it, and it's a lot of fun.
That is awesome, and I'm just lucky you squeezed us in today.
My pleasure.
So this book, I went to Barnes & Noble, and I kind of looked through it real fast. Yesterday, I was behind all day long, so I didn't get to look at a whole lot of it. But it's a story about the crew of a B-17 in World War II that was shot down over Europe in 1944. So do you have a special connection to this crew? Is that why you wrote this book?
My dad was the pilot.
Awesome!
Well, yeah, Howard Snyder, and his plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas.
Oh, yeah? Wow. Well, that was mighty nice of him.
Yeah.
So why did you decide to write this book?
Well, that's a good question. Growing up, I knew the basics of my dad's World War II history, that he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force. He flew bombing missions over Europe, and as you mentioned, in 1944, his plane was shot down, and he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded being captured by the Germans and made it back to England. But it wasn't until I retired in 2009 that I actually had the time to really delve into my dad's war history in more detail. My parents had kept a lot of information from the war years, and I just wanted to go through that and kind of organize it and learn some more detail. And at that time, I had no intention at all of writing a book. There were two items that were really significant that they had kept. One was a diary that my dad wrote while his plane was while he was missing in action, about his plane being shot down, which is absolutely riveting, and that's in the book. And the other were all the letters that my dad had written to my mother while he was stationed in England that she had kept. And reading those letters were just fascinating. And I became fascinated with the story of my dad and his crew. It became my passion. I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe, going on the internet, spending countless hours downloading declassified military documents. I started going to World War II reunions, listening to veterans tell their stories. And finally, 3 years into it, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so unique and so compelling, it needed to be told. People needed to read about it, so I decided to write a book.
That is awesome. Now, World War II and in general, and the Civil War also, but World War II, I also have a connection. My grandfather, on my mother's side, my mom's dad was in World War II, as a lot of those men at that time were. And he was a scout for George Patton. So he would go behind the lines and, you know, find the Germans and stuff like that. And he had been shot a couple times. In fact, one of the bullets from, I think, late 42, 43, was still next to his heart. So, you know, did your dad have, you know, obviously I guess he didn't get, you know, hurt really bad whenever the plane was shot down or anything like that, right? So he wasn't like really hurt bad or.
Well,
seems like, go ahead.
A B-17 had a 10-man crew.
Right.
Five of which made it back home, but five of them did not.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately for me, my dad was one of the five that made it. But all of them were injured to one degree or another when their plane was attacked by two German fighters. Some more, badly wounded than others. My dad, he had some minor burns and some shrapnel wounds in his leg, but nothing that was real serious.
Oh, well, that's good, you know. So, and I'm glad that, he made his way back. Now, I love how you put this book together as well, Steve. It's not just your dad's story, right? It's everyone, all the men's stories. And it was really, you know, what little bits I got to read, you know, it was like I was looking over their shoulder. You know what I mean? It was like I was their, you know, co-pilot in a way.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, as you said, it's not just about my dad, but it's about what happened to each member of the crew, because something different happened to each guy. And it's also about all the courageous Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help them.
Right. And, I mean, that in itself, I mean, these people, if they had been caught and, you know, do you know if any of them were, you know, for helping the Americans or the Allies?
Oh, they, as you alluded to, they were amazing people. They risked not only their lives, but those of their family and friends by aiding downed airmen. If the German secret police, the Gestapo, found out about it, they'd be arrested, tortured, and either shot or sent to concentration camps. And some of the Belgian people who did help my dad and other members of the crew met that fate.
Oh, wow. Holy moly. That's just amazing. So you had said that your dad had named the plane after your sister. So could you just kind of give us the crib notes on why he did that, besides just, you know, the newborn baby? Was that it, or just he liked the name, or?
Yeah, well, my dad was the pilot, the first pilot, and as such, he was the commander of the plane and the crew. Mm-hmm. And kind of had the last say on what the plane was named. Of the 10-man crew, three of them were married, including my dad. But my father was the only one with a child. So I guess they just came to the conclusion that, you know, that'd be a good name for their plane. It's interesting to note that the Air Force was the only entity that allowed their planes to be named and painted. They called it nose art.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Marines didn't allow their planes to be painted. The Navy didn't, nor did other countries. But the Air Force thought it would help the morale of these young guys if they could personalize their planes. And they were very creative in what they named and painted their planes. Many times it was a cartoon character, but more often than not, it was a scantily clad or nude woman. After all, these guys were in their late teens and early 20s, so they were virile young men.
Well, I know, I mean, like on the History Channel and stuff like that, you see the planes and there's, you know, these pretty girls painted there and, you know, and so that's pretty cool. So we're talking with Steve Snyder. He's the author of Shot Down, and it talks about the B-17 crew of the Susan Ruth. So we are so happy to have you here. And I understand that there was memorial set up in Belgium where for your dad's plane and crew. Is that right?
Yes, in the little village of Mackinac, Belgium, which is just north of the French border. Actually, like most World War II vets, my dad didn't talk a lot about the war. But that memorial was erected in 1989, in August 1989, and he and the other three crew members that were still living at the time – went over to Belgium with their wives for the dedication. And there my dad was reunited with all these Belgian people that hit him during the war, revisited those homes where he was hidden. And that brought it all back, and he started talking about it after that. It's a nice little memorial. So
you've been over there and seen it?
Yeah, 5 years after it was erected in 1994, I made my first trip to Belgium. I've been there 5 times, and I'm going for my 6th this fall. But my wife and I and my other sister, Nancy, went over with my parents in 1994 for the 50th anniversary of the liberation of Belgium and of my dad's plane being shot down. That's when it became personal for me, because I saw all these places firsthand. And I've been in the houses, farms, been in the rooms where my dad was hidden, and I get goosebumps just talking about it. It's quite an experience.
Yeah. So is your dad still with us, or has he passed away?
No, he died in April of 2007. He wasn't the last crew member to die, but he was the oldest at 91.
Oh, wow.
My mother passed away 5 months later. Mm-hmm. And, unfortunately, I didn't decide to write the book until 2012. It would have been great if my dad could have been around when the book was released, but it wasn't meant to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the stories even more stories that you could have got from him, you know, that's pretty cool. I love sitting and listening to the veterans. I mean, they have stories, you know, and, so it just fascinates me that they went over there and they saved the world more or less. And yet even, no matter what age they were, you know, you'd say, well, you know, thank you for doing that, or thank you for being our hero. And they go, well, we didn't do anything. You know what I mean? So there was some that said, you know, oh, it was just my job, or, you know, but that's awesome. I am just so, that's awesome.
Yeah, they you know, in my opinion, without a doubt, they were the greatest generation. And like you said, these guys are so humble. Yeah. And I think a lot of them don't want to talk about it. Well, there's a variety of reasons,
right?
You know, the traumatic experience, but the way they looked at it, you know, they had a job to do. They went over there, they did their job, and they came back home, got on with their lives. They don't consider themselves, you know, heroes. The guys that died, they consider them the heroes. They're amazing, amazing people, amazing men.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and it just amazes me that everybody that survived that ordeal. I mean, I don't know if I could have done it.
Yeah, they were a special generation. And when you think about it, you know, the United States was a lot different country back then. Most people lived out in the country. It was in the rural areas, unlike today where most people are in, you know, urban and cities and urban areas.
Right.
You know, back then, you know, a very small percentage of the people went to college, only about 10-15%. It was more of an agriculture, you know, farm-based society. You know, a lot of these guys had just gotten out of high school. A lot of them never been out of their home, their county. And all of a sudden, they find themselves halfway around the world fighting a war. So it was quite an experience for these guys. A lot of them had never been away from home. And all of a sudden, they're, you know, stationed in England. They don't have anybody looking over their shoulder. You know, they can drink, they can smoke, they can, you know, chase women and, you know, all something, you know, real, real new, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like you said, some of them hadn't even been, you know, out of the county, let alone out of the country.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, and what kind of, fascinates me as well is, you know, like my grandpa, he smoked, and he would put out a cigarette and tear off the burnt end and then put the stuff in his pocket or in the bag and put it in his pocket. So, but this book, Shot Down, that is an awesome book, and I hope everyone listening will go and get the book. Phone lines are open, 1-888-GO-FOR-IT, and you can come and say hi to Steve, ask him a question, whatever you want to do. Steve, we'll just take a break here, and we will be back in just a few, and talk some more about this awesome, awesome book. So stick around, people. We'll be back here in just a second.
Welcome back to Let's Talk with Emma on Talk Zone. Here's Emma.
Hey, everybody. It's me, along with my guest, Steve Snyder. He's the author of the book Shot Down, the number one Amazon bestseller. And we have been talking about all kinds of good stuff today. So, hey, Steve.
Hello there.
And so, tell us some more about this amazing book. Like I said, I didn't have a chance to read the whole, you know, the whole thing yet, but I'm sure there is lots more that I'm not even touching the surface on.
That's true.
So, you know, let's just dive in and let's see what's going on with this amazing book.
Okay. Well, the as you mentioned, it's just not about my dad, but about what happened to each member of the crew and all the Belgian people that tried to help them. The first half of the book builds up to the day that the plane was shot down on February 8th of 1944. And the second half of the book is all about what happened afterwards. It's all based on firsthand testimony by the people who were involved in the events that took place. What I added was just a lot of historical information and anecdotes about and surrounding the war to put it in context and give it background.
Yeah.
A couple nice things about the book. In the print book, there's over 200 time period photographs, so you can visualize everything that you're reading about. And there's also excerpts from letters from my dad, other members of the crew, relatives that make it real personal. But I probably wouldn't have written the book if it wasn't for two Belgian gentlemen, Dr. Paul Delahaye and Jacques Lalot. Both of them were young boys during the war and greatly affected by it. They saw firsthand the atrocities committed by the Nazis against their family and friends. And later in life, they became local historians, and they interviewed Belgian people and Belgium and members of the Belgium underground about events that took place involving my dad and his crew. They documented their testimony, and they gave me unbelievably detailed information that have been lost forever without their dedicated research. So I owe them a great debt. When I was writing the book, sometimes I would be writing it and think to myself, gosh, people who read this, they're going to think to themselves, wait a minute, how does this guy know all this detail about events that took place 70 years ago? But
yeah,
it's all, yeah, I'm really fortunate, really lucky that I was able to obtain so much information about it. My dad first got, he and his crew first got to England on October 21st of 1943. They were in the 306 bomb group. I am actually on the board of directors and am immediate past president of the 306 bomb group historical association. They flew their first mission on November 3rd of 1943. On a mission to Wilhelmshaven, Germany, but they were shot down early the following year on February 8th. It was on a bombing mission to Frankfurt, Germany. And flying combat missions was unbelievably dangerous and brutal. There were 26,000 men in the 8th Air Force who were killed during the war. That's more than the entire Marine Corps fighting in the Pacific.
Wow.
Another 28,000 men became POWs, prisoners of war, after their planes were knocked out of the sky by either German fighters or German anti-aircraft fire. Mm-hmm. Being a combat crewman in the 8th Air Force during World War II was the most hazardous, dangerous duty assignment in the United States military. A lot of people don't realize that.
Well, yeah, because it was kind of like, you know, flying a big tin can from what I have read and stuff, and it's really loud, right?
And yeah. It was dangerous from the time they took off and the time they landed. First of all, on a day of a mission, you had hundreds of planes taken off from, at the peak, there were 40 bomb groups or air, mm-hmm. bomb bases, air bases in England. So in the morning of a mission, you had all these bombers taken off all at the same time. And back then, there was no air traffic control. There was no radar. Everything was based on visual sight. And typically the weather was pretty crummy in England. It was either overcast with fog or clouds, and they couldn't see anything until they got above the cloud layer. So mid-air collisions were not uncommon. Then they had to deal with the elements. The planes weren't pressurized, so above 10,000 feet they had to go on oxygen, or else they'd soon pass out in a couple of minutes and could die.
Oh, wow.
It was also freezing up there. It was minus 40 to 60 degrees below zero. So frostbite was a huge problem. Many airmen were hospitalized for lengthy periods of time with serious frostbite injuries. I know one of my dad's crew members, the waste gunner John Pindrock, was in the hospital for about 2.5 months. And then they had to deal with enemy fighters. The Germans had radar stations set up along the continental coast of Europe, so they knew when these bomber formations were coming over, and they'd send up their air force, the Luftwaffe, to intercept them.
Yeah.
And then when they got over the target, they had to deal with anti-aircraft flyer, which was nicknamed FLAC, for the abbreviation for the German word for aircraft defense cannon. And they were deadly weapons. They fired 20 shells a minute, and they were calibrated to explode at the same altitude that these bombers were flying. And these shells were filled with all different shapes and sizes of razor-sharp metal that would explode out hundreds of feet and could easily penetrate the thin aluminum skin of these bombers. And then if they made it through the bomb run and then tried to form back up, they head back to England, these bombers would once again be hit by the German the fighter plane. So it was really dangerous in the early years of the war, especially in 1943. The 8th Air Force took devastating losses. They had implemented a limit on the number of missions you had to fly before you could go home, which was 25 in the spring of 1943. But it was statistically impossible to complete 25 missions. The average number of missions flown before being shot down was only six.
Six? Well, six. Yeah, I mean, wow. Well, they were kind of like sitting ducks up there, right?
Absolutely.
In a way? Yeah. Yeah. Holy cow. So they had to deal with, you know, being shot out from, you know, all around and mid-air collisions and freezing to death. And these are some tough guys.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, they'd come back and then have to go back up again, not knowing if, you know, that next mission might be their last.
Yeah. Wow. Holy moly.
Yeah. Amazing men.
Yeah. So did your dad ever, or anybody in your family ever meet the pilot, the German pilot that shot your dad's plane down? I mean, you know, I'm not like become best friends or anything, but you know, yeah, like, hey, buddy, what do you think you're doing?
That's very interesting part of the story. My dad's plane was attacked by after they dropped their bombs over Frankfurt, their bomb bay doors had been hit by anti-aircraft fire, and they couldn't get them back up. And as a result, that caused a drag in the plane. They lost airspeed, and they started lagging behind the bomber formation heading back to England. They were singled out two German Focke-Wulf 190 fighters. In the ensuing air battle, the Susan Ruth was shot down, but both those German fighters were shot down as well. One was piloted by Siegfried Merrick. His plane crashed, and he died in the plane. And the other was piloted by Hans Berger, who was actually shot down by the gunners on my dad's crew. He bailed. They actually shot each other down, but he was able to bail out and made it through the war. When I was doing my research, my wife Glenda one day casually asked me, why don't you try to find the German pilot that shot down your dad's plane?
Yeah.
At the time, I thought it was a kind of a crazy, you know, ridiculous idea. You know, I thought it'd be impossible to do that, but like a good husband, I did what she told me to do.
She trained you well.
that's for sure. And lo and behold, I found Hans Berger, and fortunately for me, he became a translator after the war and speaks English. And he gave me some wonderful insight that's in the book about what it was like against the 8th Air Force. And we have become friends.
Oh, have you?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, stranger things have happened. Well, that's pretty cool. So, I mean, wow. I just don't know where to start now. It's like, so you how did you find him? I mean, what did, I'm sure they didn't have like 1-800 called German aircraft people.
Well, yeah. Fortunately, you know, for the internet, I Googled trying to find a Luftwaffe pilot, and a couple forums came up, which I joined, and I posted inquiries on those forums because I knew the day my dad was shot down, the time of day, yeah, the location. And in a week, two guys got back to me, one from England and one from Belgium. And on that day, there was 12 B-17s shot down, and the one shot down south of Chimay, Belgium, was shot down by Hans Berger. And the guy in Belgium actually was a Luftwaffe historian and written a number of books, and he knew Hans. Mm-hmm. So he contacted Hans and asked him if it was okay for me to contact him, which he said, yeah. And for the book, I just interviewed him over the phone and through email.
Right.
But in 2016, I went to Munich, Germany to meet Hans, and Hans is still alive. He's 95 years old.
Wow.
So I met with him. We went out to lunch, had a Wiener Schnitzel and a couple of Austria beers, and then went back to his apartment and filmed an interview with him.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, like I say, we become good friends. I hope to visit him again this coming September. Hopefully he's well enough for me to come visit, because it might be the last time I ever see him. You know, he's getting up there.
That's true. So.
But he was pretty much just like the U.S. airman. He was a young guy, 20 years old, you know, fighting for his country, trying to do a job and trying to stay alive. He said it was unfortunate that they had to be shooting at each other, but, you know, that was war.
Yeah, that was just part of it, doggone it. If that, you know, Mr. Hitler hadn't been wacky, but we won't even go there. So, but that's amazing that you was able to, you know, go and see him and, you know, that he doesn't, because I have heard, you know, like on both sides that they, you know, some of the army guys have, you know, them krauts, and my grandpa used to call them krauts, and it wasn't, you know, the German people or any, you know, he wasn't politically correct, but he wasn't real fond of them. So, you know, I don't know if, you know, the German pilot that shot your dad down obviously doesn't have that feeling anymore. I don't, you know, that would just kind of fascinate me a little bit. And did your dad have those kind of feelings as well toward the guy that shot him down, or do you know?
Well, you know, my dad only knew, and the U.S. military, the Air Force only knew that my dad's plane was attacked by two German fighters. You know, that's all they knew. Yeah. They didn't know who it was.
But I mean, like the Germans in general is what I'm.
You know, last name Snyder, so you know, come from German heritage. The Snyders all came from Germany originally.
Well, my mom's dad was, you know, Meyer, so you know, German, Dutch German, so, but I mean, and that sort of stuff just kind of fascinates me. So this is pretty cool. So what else is going on with the book? I mean, you've talked to the Belgian people that, you know, protected your dad and his crew and the guy that shot him down, and I mean, all the little details. I don't want to give a whole lot away with the book because I want everybody to go out and buy it. So there you go. Now,
I will tell you, I'll tell people a little bit about, I won't go into detail about all the
troopers,
but I'll just briefly talk about my dad a little bit.
Yeah.
After he bailed out, he came down in some trees and his parachute got hung up on the branches and he was dangling 20 feet above the ground and couldn't get down. But fortunately for him, a couple of Belgium gentlemen, young men, Henri Franken and Raymond Durvan, were their names, mm-hmm, who came to his aid before the Germans got to him. They went back to the farmhouse and got a ladder and a rope and helped him down out of the tree. And this took place in the early afternoon. They told him to stay put and hide because they thought it was too dangerous to try to move him during the daylight with German patrols combing the area.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that night they came back and got him. They took him to the the Durvan home, where he stayed one night. They thought it was too dangerous for him to stay there any longer than that because those German patrols were still in the area. Mm-hmm. So a Belgium's customs officer, Paul Tocan, came on a bicycle, take him to another location, to a safer location. And this is an interesting little tip. They started out on the tandem bicycle. It was in the middle of the night. It was rainy. They came to a hill. They weren't able to pedal the bicycle up the hill. So they started pushing up the hill. They got up to the top of the hill. They came to there was a little cafe there. The lights were on. Loud music was playing. People were laughing, talking. All of a sudden, two German officers walk out with their arms on these young girls, and one of them comes up to my dad and asks him for a light for a cigarette.
Oh, my God, you're kidding me.
And so my dad, he couldn't speak German or French at that time, but fortunately Paul could and lit the guy's cigarettes. My dad said that they were too drunk and too interested in these young girls to pay much attention to these couple guys pushing up a bike in the middle of the night, so they let them go on their way. And after that, my dad was moved from place to place to place. How long he stayed in any given house depended on how brave the Belgian people were who lived there and how dangerous the Belgium underground thought it was for him to stay there. You might stay one night. He might spend 6 weeks. And typically, when the underground came across the downed airmen, they tried to get him back through back to England through various escape networks, down through France, over the Pyrenees into Spain, and then out through British-controlled Gibraltar. But something always went wrong trying to get my dad out. Either the network was compromised with infiltrators or what have you.
Yeah.
And that became very frustrating for my dad. That was very stressful. Here he is. His plane was attacked. It's on fire. He has to bail out. He comes down in a foreign country, has no idea where he is. Doesn't know what happened to his buddies on the crew, can't communicate with the U.S. military. He's being helped by complete strangers, and they can't communicate. He can't speak French. He has a little French-English dictionary in his evasion kit that he could use a little bit. And any one of these people could be a collaborator and turn him over to the Gestapo.
Wow.
So, and there's a number of instances in the book, described in the books, where he was almost discovered by the Germans, why he was hiding. And finally, he got tired of hiding. Word came that the Allies had landed at Normandy on June 6th of 1944, and he wanted to get back into the fight. Unlike most airmen, before he joined the Air Force, he was in the Army for a year in the infantry, so he knew how to fight on the ground.
Right.
And so he decided he wanted to join the French resistance and fight against the Germans, which is an unbelievably dangerous thing to do because he could die fighting, or if the Germans captured him, he would be shot on the spot as a spy.
Right.
He just could have stayed hidden, hunkered down until the U.S. troops, U.S. armies came up through France after D-Day, but he decided to risk his life to get back into the fight. So he joined the French resistance. They crossed over. This happened just right at the French border. They crossed over from Belgium and into France, and he joined this small resistance group. They were called the Mackie. The Mackie ragtag small guerrilla groups located all across France, and they harassed the Germans. They would disrupt communications, sabotage railroad lines, attack convoys, assassinate German officers. And they were given their instructions over the BBC through coded messages by the British, and they were supplied by the British through airdrops. Mm-hmm. And so my father fought with the Mackie against the Germans attacking convoys, and there's a number of encounters described in the book that he had with them. And then finally, 7 months after he bailed out, word came that there were U.S. troops in the nearby village of Trelon, France. So he walked into the village, went into the town square, went up to a army major. Actually, it was an element of Patton's Third Army, which had come up through France after D-Day. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember my grandpa talking about that. Yeah. Coming up through France, you know.
And so they interrogated him to make sure he was who he said he was, and then he made it back to England and back to his base, where he sent a telegram to my mother informing him that he was alive.
Oh, that is too cool. I bet she just did, was like, okay, bring him home, bring him home.
And the interesting thing is that my other sister, Nancy, was born while my dad was missing in action. So that was really tough on my mom. Here she's back home with a one-year-old baby girl, an infant girl, never knowing if she was going to see her husband again.
Oh, wow. That was just – well, and as you said, I mean, the Belgium people were wonderful to help, you know, your dad and all his buddies and all the other, you know, Air Force, Army, Marines, everybody. And it just fascinates me that your dad, you know, after going through all this, still wanted, I guess it's a military thing, still wanted to go out and kick some patootie.
I don't know if I would have done that. I don't know how many people would have risked their lives, you know, to fight against, because that all that area was occupied by the Germans.
Right.
Now, it was an extremely dangerous thing to do. I mean, I don't know how many people would have done what my dad had done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, he was a little, you know, most people think he's a little crazy, but I mean, it's awesome that he, you know, didn't give up, you know.
Yeah, my sisters and I, we always compared my dad to John Wayne, or if you remember the TV series Gunsmoke.
Yes. Marshall Dillon. Yeah,
Marshall Dillon. So that's the type of guy that he was.
Yeah, that is awesome. That is awesome. And, I mean, to go out there and you know, say, hey, guys, let's go out here and blow these guys up and make a path and, yeah, I mean, that is just awesome. I never met your dad, but I can just see, you know, him saying, okay, you do this and you do that and you do this and we'll do this. And yeah. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's, a farmhouse where the Mackey group stayed, at Wallers, France, just across the border. That's still there today. I've been inside that farmhouse. It's, really exciting. As I mentioned, I've been to Belgium, five times, and the Belgian people are wonderful people. To this day, they're still so thankful and grateful for the Americans coming to rescue them from Nazi occupation and Nazi oppression. And they do a great job of educating the younger generations about it as well. They've erected, as we've talked about, a number of memorials in the area, and on the anniversary of those events, they have ceremonies at those memorials to remember and honor what took place. Mm-hmm. And the big celebrations, though, are always around September 2nd, which was the day the first American troops crossed over from France into Belgium to liberate the country. Mm-hmm. And I'll be going back with my family again for the 75th anniversary celebrations at the end of August and the beginning of September. I've rounded up relatives of seven of the 10 crew members that will be going over. There'll be about 30 of us, and they're wonderful events. They last a couple of days. They have ceremonies at various memorials. They erect these big tents, and they have all sorts of parties and band concerts and dances, and all the local villagers come out to attend, the U.S. military, Belgian military, French military, the U.S. ambassador. To Belgium comes down, and they're wonderful events, and I'm really looking forward to going over there again. I've made some lifelong friends, had some dear friends in Belgium.
Oh, I'm sure, you know, and the stories they can tell, you know, still as well. I was going to ask you, in fact, you answered one of my questions that I popped in my head. If you, you know, had met any of your dad's, you know, crew's family, or, you know, if you guys get together and, you know, so yeah, that is awesome that all you guys can go over there and, you know, pay tribute to your dad and the crew and the Belgian people. And yeah, that is just too cool.
It's a thrill of a lifetime to go over there. When I was doing my research, I went on a quest to try to find relatives of all of my dad's crew, and I was successful in doing that. You know, they might be cousins, brothers, sons, daughters, grandkids, nephews, what have you, and they're scattered all over the United States. And so I keep in contact with them, and some of them went over for the 70th anniversary in 2014. Mm-hmm. There are about 25 of us over there.
Yeah.
Some other people are going to, some newer relatives or people that haven't been over, they're going to go over, and it's an experience of a lifetime, something that you never forget. Visit these memorials, and the ceremonies are very moving, and then to see these places firsthand where mm-hmm. history took place during World War II, and meet the Belgian people, and I can't describe how wonderful it is.
Well, I can hear, you know, the excitement and you smiling in your voice, you know. So, but yeah, it's amazing. And all these, younger generation, you know, that the greatest generation is dying off, you know, I mean, every day. And to have someone like you, who goes and researches this and puts it down for, you know, forever in a book, and to video and interview these people. I wish that I had been smart enough at the time to, you know, record the stories of my grandfather, you know, as you did with your dad, you know, doing the research and stuff with your dad. So, I want to thank you for writing this book, and we're talking with Steve Snyder, and the name of the book is Shot Down. So everybody needs to go out and get that, but it's just great. And then you can go over there and enjoy everyone's company and say, hey, this is amazing. This is amazing.
Yes. As you mentioned, you know, we're losing those.
Yeah.
Those men at a rapid pace. At the end of the war, there were 16 million veterans, and you know, only about 3% of those men are still with us. And yeah, that World War II was over 70 years ago, and the memory is fading. And it's really the mission of the 306 Bomb Group to remember, to honor, and educate.
Mm-hmm.
To remember the air war over Europe, to honor the men who fought it, and to educate the public about it, especially younger generations. And that's really why I do what I do. I go to air shows all around the United States, signing copies of my book. I do lots of speaking, making PowerPoint presentations, you know, trying to keep that memory alive. There was no other event in history that affected more people than World War II.
Yeah.
6 million people died. Millions more were wounded. Millions more were left homeless and displaced. World War II changed the course of the United States and the world forever.
Absolutely.
The brave young men who fought and died for freedom, you know, as I mentioned, are the greatest generation. Their sacrifice must never be forgotten.
Oh, absolutely. It should never be forgotten. And, you know, and all the generations of servicemen and women afterwards that, as well. But yeah, the World War II generation was unique, and it was one of a kind. And you know, I'm sure that your dad is so proud of you. You know, he's smiling down from heaven, your mom and dad, and saying, hey, that's my boy right there.
Well, it was an honor and a privilege for me to write the book, and also to to do what I do. It's a passion. It's really a full-time job, but it's a passion. It's something I love doing.
Yeah. Well, you can tell, you know, you can tell with your excitement and everything. So do you have some stuff coming up pretty soon as far as speaking engagements or, you know, anything like that?
Let's see. My next thing, had a little break here. I'll be in July. I'll be in Fort Collins, Colorado, signing copies of my book. The Collins Foundation has a Wings of Freedom tour where they take World War II warbirds, you know, including a B-17, to regional airports around the country, and people can go inside the planes and even pay to go up in them, which is a thrill of a lifetime in itself. They sell my book on their tour stops around the country. So I'll be hooking up with them to sign copies. And then later on in July, I'll be at Janesville Warbird Weekend in Janesville, Wisconsin. And then after that at EAA Air Venture Oshkosh, up at Oshkosh, Wisconsin, for several days making PowerPoint presentations. And I keep pretty busy in August. I'll be back in Massachusetts. I'll be in Colorado again, down in Colorado Springs. In August, I'll be going to England to visit the air base, and then over to Belgium for the celebrations. Then down to Normandy to see the D-Day beaches. And then, as I mentioned, hopefully over to Munich, Germany to visit Hans Burger.
Right.
So wow. Lots of stuff. All my speaking engagements and appearances are all on my website. If people are interested in that, my website is Steve Snyder, SnyderAuthor.com, SteveSnyderAuthor.com. And there's lots of information about the book and the air war over Europe, lots of videos on there. If someone wants an autographed book, they can go to my website and order an autographed copy. But I list all my appearances, whether they're speaking or book signings, on the website.
Cool. Well, that was my next question. If somebody, you know, wanted to get an autographed book, you know, just go to the website. That would be awesome. And, yeah, so I think, you know, this hour has flown by. You know, we have Dave, my engineer, can let me know for sure, but it looks like we have about 10 minutes, 5 minutes. He says 5 minutes. So I think we will wrap it up now. And I want to thank my guest, Steve Snyder, for coming and talking about this awesome, awesome book, Shot Down. And if anybody wants to get an autographed book, feel free to go to Steve's website and request one of those. And, Mr. Steve, you come back again and we will talk. Are you doing another book anytime soon before I let you go here?
Well, I've done a lot of filming in Belgium and that interview with Hans. And I'm working on making or hopefully making a documentary about the book. So that's kind of what I'm involved in right now, besides my, you know, appearance schedule that keeps me pretty busy.
Wow, that is awesome. All right. Well, I want to thank Steve once again for being here. And it's been wonderful, my friend.
Well, thank you, Emma. I enjoyed it a lot. I appreciate you having me on the show.
You have a wonderful rest of your day, Mr. Steve.
You too. Thanks again.
All right. All righty. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.